Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week.
It's different. It's a different kind of depression because you're desperate to enjoy this time, but because of what's going on with your mental health, you're not necessarily able to kind of be fully present. And that's something I talk about when I've spoken about my experiences with postnatal depression, is that I felt like I was kind of looking at myself through a one-way mirror.
It just goes to show about how the power of people together, the influence that people can have among each other, that sense of community, that we should really embrace that and see the opportunities that can come from that.
People who have postnatal depression can really doubt that within themselves about their ability to be a good parent and be a good mum. But actually, people that have postnatal depression are some of the best parents I know.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday. The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to Mental Health Monday, back for 2023. And thank you to everybody streaming and downloading the podcast throughout last year. We go again, and we've got more conversations to have. Thank you to everybody who's emailing me, mick.coyle@bowermedia.co.uk, with suggestions for guests and future upcoming events. Absolutely. Always keen to hear from you. Forgive me that the back end of last year got so chocker that I've had to bring a lot of those guests forwards into 2023. But it means that we've got a good long run of brilliant guests coming up for you on the podcast, the home of the UK's conversation about mental health. And that conversation continues beyond our sixth birthday. And this episode actually marks the 6-year anniversary of the start of Mental Health Monday, something I'm really, really proud of. I also pay tribute at this point as well to former producers, John Fogarty, and founding producer Lizzie Doyle, who, without who, Mental Health Monday wouldn't be in the good shape that it's in now. So all credit must go to them, of course, for the great work that they've done working on the programme. For this week's edition, we're going to talk about maternal mental health. We're going to talk about postnatal depression. We're going to talk about perinatal depression, antenatal depression. We're going to talk about that whole situation around maternal mental health with a brilliant guest who actually has been operating within the mental health field for longer than I have, because this week marks 9 years of the PND Hour. Now, each and every week, Rosie Adams, our guest, turns to social media Wednesdays at 8 o'clock to launch the PND Hour. Now, the PND Hour is about opening up conversations around issues about postnatal depression, both things that people dealt with when they first became aware of it, but things that have happened also way, way down the line. It can be work-related, home-related, a million and one different things. Of course, over 9 years, you have a lot of conversations. And that social media community in the last 9 years has grown and grown and grown. And Rosie's now a really brilliant advocate for talking about positive maternal mental health, signposting, resources, and a million and one different things. But it comes from our own dark place and our own experiences of depression, as we'll hear as part of the conversation today. And actually a sign that actually, if you do have a conversation and you do open yourself up to share what you're going through from a mental health point of view, on your terms, I might add, you can help a lot of people, many people you might not ever meet or you might not ever know, but who can relate to something that you say, something that you tweet, in Rosie's case, a poem that you write that really changes the game around this. And that's absolutely what Rosie's been able to do in the last 9 years, which is why she is such a brilliant guest. So let's meet Rosie. She is available on social media at PND and me. That's at PND, the letters, and me. And you can join Wednesday, 8 till 9, the hashtag PND Hour. That's every single Wednesday, without fail, Rosie will be there having that conversation. I started by asking her about her own experience of depression and when she became aware that that was part of her life.
So I have a history of depression and anxiety going back to when I was in my early teens. And it was never really kind of dealt with very well. I then fell pregnant with my first child at the age of 18. I was nearly 19, but so that was really challenging in that it was never really picked up by any of the healthcare professionals, you know, that I was struggling with my mental health in that pregnancy. So this is nearly 15 years ago now. And So it wasn't something that I really knew about. I didn't know what postnatal depression was. I didn't know what antenatal depression was. You know, I didn't know these things. And it wasn't ever picked up by any of my midwives or in the postnatal period. There's the Edinburgh Depression Scale test that they do, I'd say, as a test. They do that with you when you've had your baby about 6 weeks postpartum. And by that point, with my daughter, Kimberly, I was already feeling really, really depressed, really just down. I was really angry as well. And I think that's something people don't always associate with postnatal depression. The form is about how you've been feeling for the last 2 weeks. You know, have you had any thoughts of suicide, self-harm, etc.? And I lied on the form. I filled it out and I lied. I was like, yeah, I'm totally fine. And it was, you know, never followed up. And so I was given the form to fill out. And I'll allude to that a little bit later. When I eventually went to the doctor when she was about 8 months old, I was given antidepressants and sent on my way. I was offered counselling, but at that point, I didn't really know what counselling was. I didn't know what it entailed and thought, this isn't for me. So antidepressants, and that was me, sent on my way. I then fell pregnant with her brother, Connor, when she was about 10 months old. So still very much poorly and very unwell and not really knowing what I was doing. And any way, shape or form, kind of getting better. So obviously the sort of postnatal depression rolled then into pregnancy and antenatal depression, anxiety. Really, really struggled in that pregnancy. Had him, didn't struggle so much after he was born straight away. That was kind of later on. But again, when I was given the Edinburgh Depression Scale thing to do after he was born, I was asked the questions rather than writing them. And I felt that made it much harder to lie. So I was, you know, I was a bit more honest, I think, about how I was feeling. But again, it was very much antidepressants and I was sent on my way when I did go to the doctor. And then in my third pregnancy, so this is in 2012, with Harvey, I definitely had my worst experience of antenatal depression, with him. Again, felt I absolutely hated that pregnancy. I did not want to be pregnant. I just felt exhausted, and not just physically. I was mentally, emotionally, just spiritually, just absolutely gone. I was so tired, and found that really, really difficult. Obviously, having had at that point two toddlers, you know, they're all quite close together. That was really, really difficult. And it was picked up, thankfully, by a midwife, Dawn. When I was 28 weeks pregnant, she was one I'd seen previously before, because I was in a small island at that point. So the locale meant that it was, you know, very few midwives. I'd seen Dawn previously, and I'd gone to see her at the GP surgery that day, because that's where the drop-in clinic was. And I can't really remember the conversation, because it was like 10 years ago, 11 years ago, nearly. But I know that I was kind of saying, yeah, I'm okay, I'm doing all right. But I think she could tell that I wasn't all right. And she said, you know, you need to make an appointment with the GP. And I was like, yeah, I'll make an appointment with the GP. She knew full well I wasn't going to make an appointment with the GP. So she made me go and see my GP or our GP before I left that surgery. And I was given antidepressants, which, you know, obviously isn't something that, you know, helps everybody and not everybody wants to take in pregnancy. But it was the only thing that was available to me at that time. And that's, you know, thank God she did that, because I don't know if I'd be here, you know, without that intervention and without somebody actually saying, are you sure you're okay? Because I don't think you are. And actually, you know, taking the time to notice. So in the postnatal period with Harvey, that was a much easier process. I still struggled. My relationship was breaking down at that point as well. So that was really difficult. So it's more kind of situational than anything else. And then when Harvey, who didn't sleep, was around 13, 14 months old, I wrote the poem, He and Dear Me, because it just came to me one night when he wasn't sleeping. And that is why I'm here today, 9 years later.
It's quite the journey and the sort of emotional roller coaster you go on throughout that time. For anyone who becomes a new parent, the highs are high and the lows are low. Have you sort of reconciled in your mind the connection between having children and depression, or do you see the two things almost running sort of concurrently down similar tracks that just so happen to be very close to each other?
I think my depression before I had children was completely different. I think when you have, you know, depression as a parent, it comes with all these extra wonderful things like guilt and self-doubt, and, you know, the just guilt is definitely the biggest one. You know, you just feel guilty for not enjoying things like you should be. And I think, yeah, it definitely kind of, it's different. It's a different kind of depression because you're desperate to enjoy this time, but because of what's going on with your mental health, you're not necessarily able to kind of be fully present. And that's something I talk about when I've spoken about my experiences with postnatal depression, is that I felt like I was kind of looking at myself through a one-way mirror. I was doing everything I needed to do to look after my children, but I wasn't kind of mentally there. I was physically there, but I wasn't mentally there. And it took a long time for that to change.
When you talked about the form that you had to fill in, where they asked whether or not you'd had suicidal thoughts, and you said that you lied on that form.
Yeah.
What was it that made you think, I don't want to tell the truth at this particular point?
Yeah. So with my daughter, it was because I was 19, and I thought, you know, I thought I don't want to be lumped into another box of, you know, another mum that can't cope, another young mum that can't cope. So there was a lot of stigma. I felt there was a lot of stigma against young mums. And, you know, there still is. It's getting better, but there's still, you know, a lot of it was self-stigma, because I thought, you know, if I say that I'm struggling, and, you know, one of the biggest things I've experienced and other people experience when they have prenatal mental illness is that fear of having their children taken away from them. And I've spoken to healthcare professionals, midwives, GPs, you know, you name it, who know the system. They know logically that that's not going to immediately happen. You know, if you say that you have you suspect you have postnatal depression. But when you're in that moment, that is a very, very real fear and a very real possibility that you really do feel that might happen. And, you know, I think that puts a lot of people off asking for help sooner. And where I lived at the time, I lived in the Outer Hebrides when I had my children. And there wasn't any real conversations around mental health up there. And I wasn't obviously from there, I'm English, but I know that people that have lived on that island have found it really difficult to speak out about how they're feeling, because they might be a cousin with a GP, or, you know, they just worry that somebody will find out. And I think that definitely doesn't help when you live somewhere small.
And that's absolutely about stigma, isn't it? And stigma that carries across a whole community, which shuts down conversation, that always puts up a physical barrier to it. Thanks for being so open and honest about this, Rosie. I really appreciate it, by the way. In terms of those interactions with healthcare professionals, it's interesting that, as well as the self-stigma that you talked about, you also talked about the nurse who basically shoved you into a room and said, we need to get this sorted. It almost gives you those two sort of sides of things, of that sometimes there are the things we're dealing with ourselves, but also there's another world, and it's a world of people who care about people, who are very good at their jobs, who can spot signs and can try and get people into the right place as well. And I think, how do you assess those interactions with that nurse now, in terms of what she was able to do for you?
I think it comes from confidence. I think for me, and certainly what I've learned over the years of doing PNDME, is it comes from the healthcare professional having the confidence to ask the questions. And sometimes that comes with awareness and training and you know, just that education about, right, if I ask somebody if they're potentially, if they potentially feel like they have postnatal depression, what do I do if they say yes? So it's about them having those clear pathways and understandings of, right, you know, what can I do? Where can I refer them to? You know, so it's about having that confidence to ask the right questions. And yeah, just never being afraid of saying, are you okay, twice. You know, if you're not happy with the answer, don't just leave it, because, you know, if you ask that person again once, that might literally save their lives. If you say, how are you feeling? And they actually say, yeah, I'm not feeling great. You know, and having those conversations, it's just so important.
When I've spoken about perinatal mental health, maternal mental health, People always talk about the baby blues. They always mention the baby blues. And I wanted to ask you, how helpful is that phrase, the baby blues, within this wider conversation now? It's starting to very much strike me that baby blues has been a label that we've pinned to a whole spectrum of emotions as a, it's okay, it's the baby blues, you're supposed to feel a bit like this. And I wonder whether or not that, we're not in the era of cancelling things, but like whether or not the baby blues is actually, although it came from a place of people trying to put a name to this emotional state that people thought they were diagnosing in themselves, it actually instead became an excuse to dismiss people as a, well, it's okay, you don't need to worry about feeling this terrible, or you don't need to worry about how awful that you feel, because it's normal, like, and you should almost expect to feel like this. The baby blues, discuss.
The more I look into it, the more I hate it, because it, like you say, it really does sort of dismiss things. And it's really unhelpful if somebody doesn't know about postnatal depression. And I think some people think, you know, they don't necessarily know what the time frame of baby blues is. It's literally that 2 weeks postpartum. If you're still feeling rubbish after that 2 weeks, you really, you know, do need to try and start having those conversations with people. So it can be really, it can be helpful in some respects, because it can, you know, help you understand why you might be feeling, you know, quite emotional those sort of 3 to 5 days postpartum. But when healthcare professionals, other professionals, family, friends, you know, older family are saying, oh, it's just the baby blues when you're 6, 10, you know, 11 months postpartum, they're just going to be like, oh, okay, that's just what it is, and not actually making those steps to ask for help. And I think sometimes we can label it as baby blues, just think, oh, it's just, you know, because it's a bit less scary than postnatal depression, I think. You know, it's, oh, it's just the baby blues. But actually, you know, postnatal depression doesn't have to be scary if you ask for help and you're not afraid to talk about how you're feeling with people that understand.
I think it's interesting, because I think so many people I've spoken to over the years, when they say to me, I got a diagnosis of whatever it might be, it was helpful, because that you can then look down a list of symptoms and issue, and you can kind of go, oh, right, yeah, this now makes more sense. But I almost feel like an incorrect diagnosis of the baby blues dismisses, I'm not saying that people should be automatically described as having postnatal depression, but I think education around that would allow people to go, oh, actually, yeah, it's not within that time frame that you talked about. And it actually also comes with these feelings that actually we should dismiss the baby blues as almost like a short-term state of mind, whereas actually that postnatal depression period can actually come with definable feelings and emotions that I think a lot of people might be able to identify with, and therefore might be able to get almost a correct diagnosis, and with that, an understanding as to why they might be feeling the way that they're feeling. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think putting a name to it can really, really help, because I think when people don't understand what postnatal depression is, but they're feeling really rubbish, but they don't know what it is, and they just think, especially first-time mums that might not have an idea about, you know, what that emotional roller coaster is when you've had a baby afterwards, you know, because we don't necessarily prepare people for that side of having a baby. I think, no, I've lost my train of thought now, see? Where was I going with that? I just think it's really, really important to be able to identify it and to have that awareness of what postnatal depression is, what all of the perinatal mental illnesses are. You know, we don't want to scare people, you know, obviously the things like postpartum psychosis, you know, that's a 1 in 2 in 1,000, you know, chance of developing that. Postnatal depression's, it's somewhere between 1 in 5 and 1 in 7. It changes the statistic for that. But I think I always say knowledge is power. So it's not about scaring people. It's not about being afraid to sort of, you know, make people self-actualize, you know, postnatal depression. That's not going to happen. But giving people the tools and the understanding and the awareness of what to look out for is so important in order to get that early intervention, because that's the absolute key to, you know, the recovery period of postnatal depression, perinatal mental illness, is that early intervention. And if we know the women, the men that are going through postnatal depression, if we know what to look out for, and if our family members maybe know what to look out for, then that help can come sooner.
If we move on to sort of PND hour, you mm-hmm. mentioned that sort of stat and the common experiences of people, yet so many people feel like they're on their own with it, and that look at the billions of people in the world, run the numbers on those sort of 1 in 5, 1 in 6 stats, and there you have got millions of people who've had the exact same or similar types of experience to people like yourself, Rosie, who maybe feel like they can't talk about it. And yet when they do talk about it, and when with things like the PND hour, you start raising issues, maybe sharing a little bit of your own experience, you find that there's a community of people who suddenly go, we can talk about this now, can we? Are we allowed to, is this a conversation we're allowed to have? That's bringing that community to, bring that conversation to the table, Rosie, must be something you're very proud of over the last 9 years.
Yeah, I mean, it really did come out of nowhere. It was just because I'd seen lots of things on Twitter that was dedicated to, there was like handmade hour or wedding hour. And I thought, why isn't there one for postnatal depression? There was at the time PPD chat. So that was postpartum depression chat that was based in America, run by a woman called Lauren, but there wasn't one for the UK. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll do this. Having no plan for it at all. And there's not been a single week in 9 years where it's just been me. There's always been at least, two, three, there's been big numbers at times, depending on what the topic is and if we've had guest hosts and things like that. And it's huge. The conversations that we have, it just blows me away every single week that although it's on a public forum, people can see what you're talking about, unless you've obviously got a private Twitter account, people can see it, but yet people feel like they're in a room with each other, I guess. And that's the sort of magic of PND hour, is it brings together all these people. We've got a few regular dads that have been joining in for a while now. We have healthcare professionals, we have people from all different backgrounds joining in and just talking about what they've been going through. And obviously we cover something different every single week, so there's always kind of new ideas coming into that, and there's always something new to be said. And in 9 years, we've still not covered everything. We obviously cover everything from returning to work when you've had a baby and had postnatal depression. That's always a really big topic. Having another baby after you've had perinatal mental illness is always a really big topic. But yeah, we've covered everything and everything, but still not covered the whole spectrum of experiences of perinatal mental illness. And I think that's something that, yeah, I'm very, very proud of it, but it did come out of nowhere. And it was, it saved my life, because during 2014, I was going through a divorce and, I was not feeling particularly great myself. But if I'd not had PND hour to focus on that year, I probably wouldn't be here, because there was other things going on that year as well. And yeah, it saved my life and it changed my life completely. I wouldn't be here 9 years later talking to you had I not wrote that poem in December 2013.
It goes to show as well that communication is two ways, isn't it? It's people might go, Rosie does this thing and it helps other people, but actually this idea that was helpful to you. And I think that's part of the essence of community, isn't it? That you put something in and you get something yeah. back from it, but obviously it has a profound sort of impact as well. Yeah, you mentioned the poem as well, and I'd love to make sure we can get the poem, a copy of the poem, maybe up in the podcast notes, yeah, so that people can read it as well. Was there a sense for you when you were wanting to put something down on a piece of paper, or that the words came to you, that there was an outlet in writing a poem for you that maybe hadn't tapped into something which had come from a conversation with the GP? What was it about putting something down on a piece of paper that made you suddenly, I can maybe explore this in a different way?
Yeah, I think I've always enjoyed writing when I've been feeling particularly low. That's always been my kind of go-to. And I think at that point, I just wanted to explain how I've been feeling. And obviously, although it's PND and me, it does cover sort of antenatal depression as well, which, as I've said, isn't something I knew existed. And I think, still people are, don't necessarily understand it or even know it's a thing until much later down the line. And I just wanted to, explain how I'd felt. And it's not about one particular experience of mine. It's about all three of them. And my daughter's obviously read it now. She's going to be 15. And there's a line in it that says, I always wanted to be a good mum. And she read that quite a few years ago and said, but you are a good mum. You know, so that was really nice as a sort of full circle of writing that poem. And then her turning around to me and actually say, yeah, you are a good mum. And I think that for me, lots of people who have postnatal depression can really doubt that within themselves about their ability to be a good parent and be a good mum. But actually, people that have postnatal depression are some of the best parents I know, because they try that extra bit harder, especially when they're feeling a little bit better.
That must have been quite the moment there when your daughter said, because that was your daughter speaking to a younger, less experienced version of yourself. It's not like something out of Back to the Future, but I'm almost thinking there's almost a bit in a movie where there's like a loop around and you suddenly go, did it place you back to the person, right? You presumably can remember the day you wrote the poem down.
Yeah.
And then for a real life human being to acknowledge those emotions as the subject of those wants and desires is really quite huge.
Yeah, it's massive. And one of the things she did when she was about 7 years old, with my help, was write a little blog post, which was about how to help mummies with poorly heads. That's what I used to explain what I did, was helping mummies with poorly heads. And I think for me, having written that down and for her to read that and to say that to me shows that I have done a good job, because she's able to identify that actually even when somebody is struggling with their mental health, they have the ability to be a good parent.
Absolutely. And a new generation coming through, growing up in a world where they understand that there might be a challenge to come in the future. But when that challenge comes, at least, and it will be difficult for anyone to deal with, but at least they will be able to recognize it. That's absolutely, absolutely huge. In terms of the feedback you've got from either the PND, our community, or those who've sort of read the poem, are there examples that stand out to you as somebody who maybe tells a story or opens up to you, please don't give their names, of course, that really gives you a sense of this was absolutely worth, thank goodness I've done this, because as a result of that, this person has been able to tell this story maybe for the first time or seek help?
Yeah, there's been quite a few over 9 years. And one of the projects I've done twice now with P&D and me has creating these sort of, I call them hope packs. They were sort of packs with for bits and pieces, self-care things that I sent to the mother and baby units across the UK, psychiatric mother and baby units. And there is a particular mum who I'm in contact with now who read my poem in the mother and baby unit, having been in there with, I think, postnatal depression. And the sort of the impact that had on her to sort of realise actually there was light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, there's been a few that have read my poem that have been in mother and baby units. And that's just amazing for me that it's just, you know, had such a far reach. And I think that's one of the things for PND and me is that obviously not everybody joins in with PND Hour, but on occasion I will get a message from somebody that says, for whatever reason, they, you know, they haven't actually physically joined in, but they've watched the hour and they have gained so much from it because they have realized that they're not on their own and how they've been feeling, you know, isn't completely alien, and that they're okay, that they're going to be all right. And it gives them that hope. And I think there's been loads over the years that have contacted me and said, you know, it's been really, really helpful. And even healthcare professionals as well have said, you know, it's changed the way that they've maybe worked, because it's basically weekly feedback about what works and what doesn't within postnatal depression sort of care and perinatal mental health care. There's some friends I've got now actually from the first couple of years of PND and me, who I'm still friends with now and you know, work with within perinatal mental health sort of voluntary sector services and things. So yeah, it's been amazing. And I'm still completely blown away that it has done what it's done. And I'm here 9 years later still doing it. It's just incredible.
I think sometimes as well, when people are, I'm going to call you a trailblazer, when people are trailblazing, it comes from such a small point, as in it comes from a person with a pen or a person with a mobile phone, or it feels like it's insignificant or not significant within the big, but actually just over that time to see that growth, even those early tweets and those early blog posts or those early newsletters, I imagine would have connected with, you know, some people to the point where they went, oh, actually, yeah. And actually that would have been, that might have been enough, you know, just to send out one set of newsletters and for people to go, oh, that's good. But the fact you've then thought, oh, I'm going to maintain this, I'm going to build this, I'm going to run this. And I've got this thing that it was based on something I saw online, but I love this phrase about embracing persistence. This idea that even on the days, you know, and I'm nearly 300 episodes into this podcast, even on the days where you think, are people going to go for this? Like, do people really want for you to maintain that? Because of the off chance that actually somebody is almost relying on that, or somebody feels like it's just the thing they needed to see at that moment, gives you a sense of just the huge power in words, in communication, in having the confidence to share your side of the story, or have the confidence to raise an issue that makes a person think, even if they don't immediately respond or take part in like a public Twitter forum. Just goes to show about how the power of people together, the influence that people can have among each other, that sense of community, that we should really embrace that and see the opportunities that can come from that, as opposed to sometimes either feeling like our own self-worth doesn't let us take part in something, or it holds us back from doing something. Whereas actually having that little confidence to step through the door, to put something down in a poem, to put something out on the internet, can really open us up to something really positive.
Yeah. That is the reason why I do PNDR every single week. We've literally done PNDR on Christmas Day, you know, as a drop-in, because although there has been weeks where I've gone, oh yeah, I'm really tired, and or there's been other people that have hosted it for me because I've not been able to do it for internet or, you know, whatever, bereavements and things. We've had it there every single week because I know people that really, really need it. And that consistency and just knowing that they've got this 1 hour on a Wednesday evening where they can come together with this community that understand, they get it, they can hold you and they can hold that hope for you. And I think that's really, really powerful, that community. And although it's only 1 hour a week, like I say, it's a ripple effect, because people will make connections through the hour. And there's people that, you know, were joining in sort of 7-8 years ago who have now got amazing groups of friends because of PND hour. So it's more than an hour. It's a community. And I'm always just humbled by the people that come together and the community and the friendships that are made from it. And yeah.
If people want to get involved in PND Hour, Rosie, what can they do?
So it's every Wednesday between 8 and 9 on Twitter. You don't actually need a Twitter account to view it, I think. The best way to do it is to put the hashtag PND Hour into your search box on Twitter and then click, it's either live or current, I can't remember what it is. And yeah, just tweet away. If you use the hashtag, I will see it. Other people that join in, you know, our sort of regulars will see it. We'll make sure that you're supported. And it's an amazing, supportive, lovely community. And yeah, I'm very, very proud of it.
We'll put your Twitter handle on the write-up to the podcast as well, so people can find that in the notes. And if we can put the poem on there, that might be a nice way as well for people to interact with that as well. Congratulations, Rosie, on 9 years. Yeah. You've always got to do 10 at least, though, haven't you, Rose? You've got to round it up to a nice.
Yeah.
You've got to get up
yeah,
to the double.
You've got to
up to the double figures. That's when you can really get the cakes and the balloons going.
Yeah,
no, but
definitely.
Huge congratulations on everything you've achieved with it. The difference, I'm sure, over the years that you've made as well. And thank you for sharing your story on Mental Health Monday.
Thank you very much.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.